undermine my confidence in those two. So I went, you know, and added in a couple of others, you know, as B's and C's, just, you know. But domain expertise, and that's a tough thing to do, to go run down a horse in space like that. Not easy, and absolutely gets there under Gallardo. Nice opportunity for Gallardo to, as well, to get on a horse for Chad. Just thumbing through here, too. I mentioned Saez. I should also note the maiden winner that looks like there's plenty of upside, that untreated. The Team Valor we talked about a little bit. Yeah. Easy winner at 6-5 and went off by widening 8¾, the chart says. Yeah, that was one of Luis Saez's other wins, along with Micheline and Win From Within. And it was Saez who got nipped by Gallardo in that Florida Oaks. Everywhere we looked, I mean, I'm jumping around a little bit, but that's part of the weekend recapping. Rich Migliori, by the way, top of hour two. We'll go through everything with Rich from his perspective. The California action was really fun, and it was kind of cool that, you know, most of the other venues had you know, reached their conclusion, and it then gave you, you know, the opportunity. When things are flying, when there's racing going on at, you know, across the country like that, and you're trying to follow things at three venues, it gets a little hairy. You know, it's one of the reasons you play, you know, the big multis, because you can put the ticket in, and at least you've got, you know, you got your feet in the water, no matter what. At least, you know, ideally you see it through. But if you get knocked out, you know, then you got to kind of reboot a little bit. But that's one of the benefits. But when you're going from, you know, from screen to screen, I mean, I've got the RTN up, and, you know, you got four at once, and so you can, you know, quickly flip around. But it's hard. Let's admit it. Not easy to keep track. So that, I thought it was kind of fun that things had pretty much, you know, the decks had cleared out for the San Carlos, the Kilroe, the Big Cap, and that Nightcap. It was, you know, it was nice just to have one screen up and, you know, and have a nice paced late afternoon portion of these cards. And the racing was really engaging. You know, after the San Felipe, and things had started with Phil D'Amato and that Going Global, the Irish import that won the China Doll. And there were a couple of other, you know, a couple of other performances leading up to the San Felipe. But, you know, the San Felipe played out, you know, kind of as you expected. Then to get to the stakes portion, and there was a very good performance by Whisper Knot, the allowance, and that horse did look like, you know, an even money type, and put in a good effort. That there's some upside when we reach, maybe now that I've got another opening, maybe we'll get to Baltus today, but we'll have to ask about Whisper Knot, because that horse looks like there's real upside to him. But then Brickyard Ride, I don't know, for those that read the way, you know, my analysis of it, Brickyard Ride looked to me like Lone Speed, and was in position to, you know, to lead him on a merry chase, and that couldn't have played out any better. And I got to tell you, the betting was bizarre. How does Brickyard Ride 5-1? And the horse that, you know, that he most recently handled, the weird part about this, coming out of that Cal Cup sprint, him and Tiger DeSugo, Slugo, Tigre de Slugo goes off at 5-2. He had just beaten him by three lengths. I was delighted to build things on Brickyard Ride. And then for Centino, he took control and, to quote Jay Privman, improved his position. That race was over in the first, I don't know, 75 yards. I said, this is over. It just was obvious. So I was thrilled. Good for the Calbred. What a nice horse this is. Craig Lewis. And, now over 300,000. He's 7-13. Really nice. So that kind of, made the afternoon, from there it unfolded. Dan Blacker with Hit the Road, who, Jay, some of you may have seen, I put up a tweet on Saturday night. It occurred to me that, Jay Privman has told you, life is good. Okay, Baffert three-year-old, kind of telegraphing and the ownership. And, there was a lot to recommend. But Jay made it very clear early on that this, was a horse that was going to be central to the three-year-old storylines this year. The other two winners, though, on the grade ones, Jay told you about Hit the Road last year, well in advance, that he had all the tools and was going to be an important mile type competitor. And he's on a roll, obviously. Dan Blacker's first grade one. There was that adorable video of Christina Oliveris Blacker rooting him home and around. And then there was Idol. And Jay, Jay, there's another one. Jay has talked about Idol for months. And, is it big cap quality level of old? No, but it's what we have these days. And that's a horse that's still, that's still on the improve and still developing. Maxfield ran okay. Maxfield and Independence Hall. Independence Hall in particular, who ended up fourth here, beaten, two lengths and change. I thought that Independence Hall particularly was a little compromised by his position. He had to basically not check, but Pratt had to keep him, and he was pretty much bottled up for over a mile, easily over a mile. And it's a little tough sometimes when you got a horse on hold, on hold, on hold, on hold, on hold, on hold, on hold. And, the horse is, he knows where he is on the racetrack. Don't think that, he doesn't know when they turn for home, when they go into that turn that, this is usually where they ask me. But instead, he's on hold, he's on hold, he's on hold, he's on hold. And it's a little tough. And Maxfield and Giroux, they had position that they could have taken advantage, and it seemed that I probably should watch it again. I watched it a second time, but I haven't watched it, just only watched it live once and then the replay once. So probably should watch it again. Because Independence Hall was my, I was focused on Independence Hall. That was who I keyed off of, and actually took a swing at the rainbow payout, and I only went a little miscue here. My A's were Independence Hall and Maxfield, and my other two horses were Idle and Express Train, but I didn't back them up. And for another $18.80, yeah. But I'd already spent. I'd spent more than I like to actually on one of these, on these jackpot payouts. But anyway, that's just me. Idle and Rosario you know, it just felt like having the outside flow was the preferable voyage, and for express train too. And it was good. It was a good race. And then the Nightcap, you know, that horse, I was shocked that Defunded went off at that price, over 8-1. I wrote, and again, the way I wrote it up, that's one of those scenarios that I've talked about a lot. That's a horse that debuted at 2, then was gone, has had plenty of time to develop, was actually even gelded on top of that. He's a dialed in. And you know, the Pegram Watson Whiteman three-headed ownership monster. And I read through the clocking report, and it was obvious that there was a ton of speed in this race. And Defunded, based on that debut back at Del Mar last summer, looked like a horse that was going to come from off the pace. You had Rosario. What was there not to like? And you knew, you know, with the other Baffert that was, you know, had a bit of a buzz, the Run Happy colt, that following C, and Samantha Siegel's horse as well, and the Patron D'Oro, who had nice morning notes, and there was Mr. Impossible, who I thought was the horse to beat. Vantage Point, the Y God Firster. You know, there was just there was too many horses with sharp gate works. You knew there was going to be a nice pace on. And so Defunded ended up being a really nice way to end the weekend, frankly. So it was really a satisfying afternoon. If you like to play and you like of participant you are around the game. And it was certainly, you know, the personal stories, as always, they resonate. So we got tons more to do. Let's stay here. Let's get John Green in, and we'll start some recapping. And really the Tampa win between Cassie family and Cassie team. You know, whether it's, you know, Mark talked about sending this horse up to the, you know, the Cassie Training Center. Mitch Downs, who runs the show there, does a great job. Mark also crediting his man down at Palmetto's as well for getting the horse going. And we'll talk about the family side of father and son Green, because Len Green, the Green Group, of course, we've talked to Len, talked to John about, you know, what the Green Group does for horse owners and industry stakeholders in terms of their accounting and, you know, management advice. But it's more fun to talk to Len and John about successful horses on the racetrack. And Helium absolutely makes the most of his three-year-old debut. It was a turf debut, of course, as well. Wins the Tampa Bay Derby, and John Green joins us. John, congratulations to you and to Len and everybody.
Steve, thanks so much. It certainly was, like you said before, it certainly was just a phenomenal weekend of racing. And obviously, you know, winning a race like the Tampa Bay Derby is just the cherry on top. But if you're in the business and you didn't enjoy this weekend's of racing, you may want to look for a new vocation, because to me, it was just top to bottom. It was phenomenal. It was just absolutely phenomenal. And also thank you for mentioning, you know, the family affair, you know, with me and dad and mom. And my mom is very quick to remind everybody that she owns 51% of all the Green family assets. So I don't want to leave her out of this conversation.
I love that. Because it's so often you and Len are referenced most readily, but all right. Mrs. Green as well. What's your mother's name? I'm not even aware.
Lois Green. And actually, my mom actually managed the racing operation. You know, when we started, she was actually the general manager in the 80s through the 90s. And then it wasn't until I got out of college, you know, where I started taking over some of the management of it. But mom really, you know, when we were in the top three in wins in the country back in 85, 86, 87, that was all my mom. That was all under my mom's guidance and leadership. So, you know, we've just taken the operation in a little bit different direction, but I have a lot of, you know, very high mark to try to shoot for every year based on her past success.
I love it. Well, the success portion, I mean, we'll talk more than about helium because there's so many different, you know, there's so many different combinations that that DJ is involved in, and so many different ways to promote the you know, the industry, including things like the Empire Racing Club, you know, which you and your father and Aaron Yagoda, you know, have been, and Mark have been, you know, so great to help them get off the ground with proven strategies. Talk about helium, and you know, this is one of these horses that has been affected by the way in which, you know, the winter set in and, you know, had plans, you know, kind of interrupted and moved around. And, you know, there was already plenty of questions to answer, you know, making a first start at three, going a mile and a 16th. It had never been on dirt. I mean, there was already plenty of Cirrus going into this. Well, talk a little bit about, you know, from 2-year-old to 3-year-old and taking a swing in this spot.
Yeah, and Steve, you know, this is really, as much as we run this like a business, and we really try to. You mentioned my dad is a CPA, and I'm a financial planner by trade, and we really try to take the analytics, you know, involve the analytics and decision making and stuff like that. And unfortunately, sometimes you know, man plans and God laughs. And Helium was up in Canada, and he won his first two races, you know, rather easily on the Tapeta there. And we were all set to run him in the gray stake. And you know, he was the favorite in that race. And if he won that, he probably would have been, you know, sovereign, you know, 2-year-old of the year. And then it snowed. They had a weird snowstorm in November and canceled the race. And then because of COVID protocols, they just canceled the last 2 weeks of racing up at Woodbine. So we were kind of, you know, lost a little bit. We regrouped, shipped them down to Fairgrounds, and we were going to run them in the LeCompte. And about a week or so before the race, he just wrenched his ankle after a workout. And it was nothing serious, but it was enough to, you know, to make us take a step back. Mark Cassie, to his credit, said, let's bring the horse home. He brought him to his home facility and watched him train and, you know, x-rayed him and everything. And he was fine after about 2 weeks. But at this time of year, it's so critical. I mean, you know, 2-3 weeks of training is like gold in your pocket, you know. And I think a lot of the people around the country, especially at Oaklawn and New York, are finding that out, where, you know, you miss some training dates and you're really behind the eight ball. So, you know, we had to pivot not once, not twice, but three times with this horse. And it's just a testament to not only Mark Cassie's training ability, but also this colt's ability. I mean, he not only accomplished all of those goals you said, first time on the dirt, first time going two turns, you know, in a grade two going from just a listed stake. That's a lot for a horse to overcome. And then on top of it, to be, you know, 4, 5, 6 wide the entire race and still have something left at the end, that's when we sat down and said, you know what, in our 30-plus years of being in the business and in Mark's 40-plus years of being in the business, it was really astonishing just how much talent this colt has to be able to overcome all of those obstacles.
Well, and there's that portion, and then there's, you know, being out there, you know, mid-stretch and looking like a winner, except for, you know, the oncoming and potential of Hidden Stash. at certainly at the 16th pole, you had to think, oof, this horse is going to, well, we're going to be second, and this horse is going to go right on by. And Jose Farrar, 56 years old, hasn't been, you know, hadn't won a graded stake in 10 years. Farrar right. held him together, made sure that he was aware, and more or less actually surged away. That's, to me, that was the most impressive part of the whole performance.
No question. And you know, I'm laughing when you mentioned Jose Ferrer because, you know, Jose won his first race with us back in the late 80s. I mean, that's how far back our relationship with Jose goes.
In Jersey.
And it was a claimer. And you know, Jose won a lot of races for us at Monmouth, you know, back in the day. And when we were looking for riders at the beginning of the year, because we've run some nice horses at Tampa this year, and when we were looking for a rider in the beginning of the year, you know, I was going down the standings with my parents, and I said, oh, Ferrer. And we automatically assumed it was Jose's son because, you know, Jose's as old as we are, you know. So, but lo and behold, he's in excellent shape. He really, you know, did a great job of, in the beginning part of the race, of allowing Helium to find a strip in the racetrack that he felt comfortable with. So he kind of went from the three path to the four path to the five path, you know, on the backstretch just to find proper footing for him. Because, again, like you said, the horse had never run on the dirt before. He's trained on the dirt, but he's never gotten dirt in his face. And that's an experience also for a young horse that, that's a little alarming. I mean, I know, you know, they mentioned with Life is Good about how he was looking at the infield tote board when he won because, you know, that was a new experience. And we can argue amongst ourselves whether that's really the reason why or not. But be that as it may, young horses, especially really talented young horses, sometimes their attention, you know, wanes and they're looking at other stuff or they get focused on things like getting dirt in their face and they don't know how to handle it. So the fact that Jose was smart enough to be able to find a strip for this horse Helium to run down and feel comfortable with and then get in front and not relax on him. Because the horse was like, okay, I'm done. I passed everybody. You know, that was fun. And Jose knew he had a little bit left extra because Hidden Stash was right on our tail. I mean, he was right there. And Hidden Stash is a nice horse. I mean, I know mm-hmm. people are looking at the Tampa Bay Derby and saying, well, what did you beat? You know, there's going to be a couple of horses coming out of that race that'll show up in the Derby. I'm very confident of that. And, you know, I think that Helium showed he did what he was supposed to do. He did beyond what he was supposed to do. He, you know, if he ran second in that race, like you said, we would have been very happy and said, wow, we got something to build on. And he ran second and, you know, let's look to see what our next spot is. But he had something left and he was kind of toying with the group until Hidden Stash got in his eyesight.
Well, it powers away and wins and sets off, an interesting postscript because yesterday upon further review and Marty McGee, you know, talking to Mark and, you know, the aftermath includes potential for him to essentially not run until the Derby. And that immediately raised some eyebrows. But I did see that Mark actually had a little bit of a modifier as well, saying, you know, that there's potential for that, but, you know, we'll evaluate as we go. And, you know, this is a gambit that's been tried the last couple of years off of Tampa Bay Derby wins, including by Todd Pletcher. And it really has not amounted to much. I mean, talk about what'll go into this decision.
Yeah, and Steve, you're absolutely right. It would be a very unorthodox decision to make. And I guess we have to kind of look at it again from a business standpoint and say, how do we get this particular horse, Helium, how do we get him to improve 20%? Because in reality, if you look at, regardless of what metric you look at, whether it's the sheet numbers, thoroughgraph, you know, the buyer numbers, or even the eyeball test, we have to improve. Helium has to improve by about 20% to be able to knock heads against Life is Good or or some of the top horses that are out there. Because right now we've only run three times. This is only his first time going long, and all the other things that we mentioned. So how do we get the horse to improve 20%? And it's not easy at this stage of the game. So we're going through the analysis right now and saying, okay, is training him into fill in the blank, the Arkansas Derby, the bluegrass, the wood, is that going to help us, improve the horse's ability and by 20%? Or is it, hey, we better make sure that we give him as much time as possible, and over these next 8 weeks, we can train him enough where we'll be able to improve, the metric that we need. It's unorthodox, but I think when you look at who's ahead of us, as far as odds-wise in the future, Greatest Honor, Life is Good, Essential Quality. I mean, those are all really outstanding horses, and I haven't even gotten to, Midnight Bourbon, Proxy, Hidden Stash, and Medina's, the horses like that.
Sure.
So regardless of, what happens between now and the first weekend of May, we have to step up our game. And I know it hasn't worked in the past for other people, but it's almost like, and I pause to use this analogy, but because I'm not a big gambler, but when people go to the casino and they go to the roulette wheel and they say, oh, look, number 14 came up three out of the past four times. I'm going to bet on number 14 because it works. Or I'm not going to bet on number 14 because it's a hot number and I want to, the other 36 numbers or whatever, may come up. The problem with that analogy is every time the roulette wheel spins, it doesn't have a memory of what it did before, okay? Helium doesn't know what King Guillermo did before or what Pletcher did before. He has no idea what those horses before him did. All we know is that he is his own athlete, he's his own animal, and if we feel like that these next 8 weeks will be best served for him to bypass some of the Derby preps, he's earned it. He got the 50 points already, so we don't need to prove that he is deserving of being in the starting gate for the Kentucky Derby. We just want to make sure that if he is in the starting gate of the Kentucky Derby, that we've given him the best chance possible to be successful.
Well, and that'll lead me to a wider conversation. John Green with us, DJ Stable, of course, and Helium's win in the Tampa Bay Derby. That leads me to previous experience and kind of a wider discussion about the way you and your father and your mother and Lois have approached the game. And how much knowing the Derby, the Derby lead up and getting to Derby, how much of that and how much of the experience going back 20 years to Song and a Prayer, how much of his travail weighs on you in making these decisions?
Yeah, that's a very good point. And Song and a Prayer was the first horse that we owned a piece of that ran in the Derby, and he was fresh off of the Florida Derby victory. We can go on that experience, and don't forget our young trainer. I say that joking, like our trainer Mark Cassie. He's had some experience in some big races also. He hasn't won the Derby yet, but he's won 3,000 races and other Grade One wins, and he's a Hall of Famer. So we not only have the benefit of our own experiences, but of his experiences, and then we have over 400 clients that are in the horse business, and we've been able to kind of pick their brains also of, how they either succeeded or didn't succeed, going into the Derby. So all of that information, all that knowledge is kind of getting, processed and put down. But to go back to Song and a Prayer, he was a horse that was fresh off the Florida Derby. And, in retrospect, in hindsight, he probably shouldn't have run in the Kentucky Derby because he was really a front-running sprinter that just caught a good track that day and absolutely was able to carry his speed. You get seduced into, wanting to run the horse into the Kentucky Derby because you've never been there before. We were partners with Bobby Hurley, who was a successful athlete, and he also wanted to, run in his first Kentucky Derby. So there were a lot of factors going into it as to why we ran that horse in the Derby. The one takeaway from that experience, though, was we promised ourselves, my mom, dad, and I, that we were never going to run in the Kentucky Derby again, or any grade one for that matter, unless we really felt like that horse had a chance. Because as you know, you only have so many starts with these horses. And if you overtax them because they're running, you know, against horses that they just aren't fast enough to run against, that's when they have a tendency to overstride and hurt themselves.
Well, and for those that either, you know, came to the game subsequently or are, you know, are fairly new or just don't remember the Song and a Prayer experience, wins the Fountain of Youth and comes back and participates not just in the Florida Derby, but also in the Bluegrass. And right. In the Bluegrass, essentially had to chase Millennium Wind all the way around. And then, you know, the Derby, you know, you got to go. He was 13th in one of the best fields assembled for the Derby in memory, actually. And also, of course, a Derby that ends up, you know, being one of the fastest in 50 years, probably. So,
right.
Unfortunately, by the time you get out of Derby, he only has one more start in him, and that was it before going to stud. But that was in the Jersey Shore, and then his career ended. But you got the Fountain of Youth win. He didn't run well in the Florida Derby, and then ran okay in the Bluegrass. So there was no reason necessarily not to run in the Derby.
Right, exactly. And I think we've learned from, you know, just from a management style that these horses only have so many starts. And, you know, when Mark asked us specifically about Helium, I basically talk to Mark every day. And we go over, you know, different horses depending on, you know, what we're shooting for or how they're doing. And when we talked about Helium, he asked me a very frank question, which is, you know, Greens, what are your goals for Helium? Like, what do you want to do with him? And, you know, we huddled and talked about it. And basically, there were two races that are on our agenda with him, the Kentucky Derby and the Haskell at our home track at Monmouth Park. And not to say he wouldn't run in other races, but those are our primary goals with him. You know, thankfully, he's out of a really good mare. But he's by Ironicus, who is an unknown first-year stallion, and not a commercial stallion per se yet. And so I don't have to worry about padding his resume to become a stallion prospect yet. It's not like we have to worry about, well, you want to place or win, you know, any of the other Derby candidate, Derby preps, because it's going to make it look good when he stands at stud. We have the luxury of not worrying about that with him right now. All we want to do is run him in the Kentucky Derby, and then hopefully another race, and then the Haskell. And at that point in time, if we've given him the best opportunity to run well in those races, then I think we've managed him well.
Well, from a wider perspective, give us a part of the Nitha board. You know, over these 20 years, talk about how, you know, your approach has changed and, you know, what has happened in and around the industry that, you know, is the greatest influence in how your approach has changed.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think, Steve, that in the beginning, like a lot of people, we came into the business not knowing a lot of the players, and we're more interested in the claiming ranks, the quick action, the you know, running down for the fourth race on a Wednesday, and hopefully getting your picture taken, and then claiming a horse on Thursday and trying to do it again a couple of weeks later. And when we looked at the economics of that, it really didn't make sense. So we shifted gears and started buying better bred horses. And we've again had to be nimble and shift gears, because all of a sudden we went from, hey, we can go to a sale, and if we wanted to buy a horse at a certain price point, you know, for $100,000, $150,000, which is a lot of money for a horse, we could do that. We could go in and buy kind of our top prospect in that price point. And then the game changed because you have really successful partnerships like, you know, West Point Thoroughbred and Centennial and Eclipse. And then you have other partnerships now at a bigger level where, you know, Windstar is starting to partner with China Horse, and you get the Avengers that are buying horses. And all of a sudden you can't outspend people. So you have to look elsewhere and say, all right, are we going to try to outbid some of these big guns and spend all of our money for two or three horses? Or do we have to reinvent ourselves and kind of be the Oakland A's and Tampa Bay Rays of horse racing and look at, you know, different analytics? And that's when we started buying athletes and buying athletes from first-year stallions. And we've had our best luck doing that. You know, way back in the 80s, we had a filly named Do It With Style who won the Ashland for us, a grade one. And she was the first from the first crop of Pancho Villa, who, again, never really succeeded at stud after that. We just had the best one. You could say the same thing about recently about Jaywalk, who was champion filly, you know, champion and you know, won the Breeders' Cup juvenile filly race. And she was out of the first crop of Cross Traffic. And, again, you can say maybe Cross Traffic isn't a successful stallion, but she certainly was, you know, the best. And now Helium, where Ironicus only had really a handful of foals in his first couple of crops, and now he's the best of that group. So we're finding that if you take athleticism first and then pedigree second, that seems to be a better alternative for us than trying to outbid people for the next great Nyquist or the next, you know, the next Uncle Mo or the next Tappet. Or we can't afford to knock heads with those bigger organizations and bigger individuals that want to buy those. So you have to be nimble. And I think that's the takeaway that I tell people all the time, whether it's our clients or people from Empire Racing Club or anyone else who asks the question. You have to be flexible. You have to be nimble because there's not one plan that is always going to work, because you know what? There are a lot of really smart people in this business that can outsmart you or outspend you. So you have to kind of, you know, constantly change and be flexible and be a little unorthodox sometimes, because that's the only way that you're going to be able to stay ahead of the rest of the group.
Well, and, you know, even early on, you some of your early successes going back, that same philosophy had to apply, because I think about, think about a mare like Career Oriented. That was by Cat's
wow.
Career.
Yep.
And actually, you paid a lot of money for that horse. That she was $75,000 as a OBS June 2-year-old from, you know, Cat's Career.
Right. Yeah. And that's when that June sale was the leftover sale. I mean, that was really, you were sifting through a lot of horses that either didn't make it to any of the other sales or weren't fast enough or just, you know, were kind of picked over. So that was a lot of money for that modestly bred horse. And even, you know, Mo Green, who now it's going to sound silly, but Mo Green, who won, you know, multiple graded stake races for us, she was an Uncle Mo, but she was from Uncle Mo's first crop, and people weren't sure about Uncle Mo at that point. So it's easy to look back now and kind of say, hey, well, that of course you bought an Uncle Mo filly. What, you know, no kidding that the horse was good, but that wasn't the case. So I think you have to be flexible and a little unorthodox, and you have to trust that the people that you have around you know what they're doing. And that goes from Mark Cassie all the way down to, you know, we bought this horse Helium. We bought Helium privately from Bo Hunt, who, you know, is probably one of the most successful pinnockers in the business. But Bo's also a friend of ours for almost two decades. I trust him. And when we talked last year when the pandemic was going on and they weren't sure if they were even going to have two-year-old sales at the time, Bo said, hey, I got four or five horses on my farm out of the 70 that I have. I got four or five that you guys really should come down and see. Mark went over and watched them train two or three times. We landed on three horses. Two of them we bought, one being Cotton, who's a Twirling Candy New York bred that is a turf horse for us, Helium. And the last one that we didn't buy because we couldn't agree on a price was Miss Brazil, who just ran second in the Busher.
So, Tony Dutcher,
for Dutcher, exactly. So you know, you have to have these connections with people also, and people you can trust, because there are a lot of people, Steve, that that, and not just us. But there's a lot of people that, come sale time, you know, they see the Greens coming, or they see, you know, the Joneses coming or the Smiths coming, and they can't wait to unload a horse on them. But it's people like, you know, Bo Hunt, who we have a longstanding relationship and we trust, that gave us the impetus to go ahead and buy these horses. And you know, my parents and I, it was sight unseen. I mean, we to this day, I still have not laid hands on Helium yet because, you know, because of the pandemic and I've been stuck here in New Jersey. But Helium doesn't know that. He doesn't care. He doesn't know if John Green is you know, owns him or Len Green or Lois Green. He's just a really good athlete that Bo picked out for us because he was training the horse for, you know, for 4 or 5 months and really thought that it would be a good fit for us. So you have to be hooked up with the right people also.
No, that's a message that gets reiterated, you know, all the time. And you know, if you're going to be serious about the game in a, you know, in a long-term fashion, getting a, you know, getting an organization, putting together a team, and, you know, it's certainly, you know, it might not be the first order of business for people to think of, but, you know, we've discussed it before when you've been on and when your dad joined us about, you know, the Green Group, for instance, and what, you know, what a an experienced and very industry specific accounting firm and advisor can do for you. And that's you know, that's one part of the equation. I mean, we've had, you know, over the years when I've addressed that portion of the conversation, you know, having, you know, having the horseman team and you know, if you're going to breed, having, you know, the farm where you keep your mares and the, you know, the group that starts your yearlings, you know, making decisions about who to go forward with, who to sell if you're on that side. I mean, it's got to be people that you trust implicitly and you have confidence in, and that everybody's on the same page and have, you know, mutual interests are at heart.
No question. And Steve, you also, and you know, I say this with sincerity, you also have to have a lot of patience because, you know, this weekend, we've been building our program for years and years and years. And this weekend, we were fortunate enough to either own ourselves or have bred six different horses that were running in stake races this weekend. Okay. And I was all excited. Mom and Dad were all excited for a great day of racing because win, lose, or draw, we figured we were going to have a couple of races that we really, you know, had reason to cheer. And at 6 o'clock in the morning, Mark Cassie called me and said, "Hey, I got bad news for you. That horse that you really like, the 2-year-old, you know, Spitester that you bought for over $200,000. I breathed him this morning and he had a heart attack and died on the racetrack." And that's the way our day started, was, oh my God, this horse that we handpicked and, you know, had a bad heart valve. And after a 3-furlong, you know, breeze, dropped dead of a heart attack. And you forget sometimes that's part of this tough business, is that these are athletes and they get hurt and they get sick. And sometimes, unfortunately, they die. And so you go from, like, you're waking up in the morning expecting the highest of highs and I can't wait to watch the races and everything. And you start off with a day like that. And then to end it on such a high note, like Helium winning a grade two and, you know, being in the conversation to run in the Kentucky Derby. I mean, that's how quickly things change in this business. Over a 12-hour window, we went from just the lowest of lows to the highest of highs. And if you don't have the temperament to handle that, then it's a gut-wrenching business.
Well, no doubt. It's the highs are second to none, and the lows are unfathomable.
Exactly.
I talk about this all the time, and it's one of the, to me, it's one of the central characteristics of the sport and of the industry that scares and intimidates its critics, the people that don't have the wherewithal to deal with, you know, with, you know, what essentially is a somewhat anachronistic lifestyle, you know, what it what it lacks in modern effect, it makes up for in you know, the emotion and the gratification when, you know, when you're successful.
Absolutely. I mean, I woke up this morning and came down the stairs and I said, wow, I wonder why my right hamstring is bothering me so much. And it was because my wife said to me, because you were slapping the program against your leg so hard that you probably bruised or pulled a muscle. I mean, that's how exciting you get. That's how exciting you get when you watch these horses run and they represent your colors. And they also represent, you know, all these plans that you kind of put together. And it's great when a plan comes together, like a horse, like a Helium. There's no way to describe it. I mean, it's to make me speechless is hard to do. and that horse in that race was just an awe-inspiring, accomplishment for us. And again, we've been fortunate to win all kinds of graded stake races. I can't remember being as excited as I was and as emotional as I was as watching Helium win the way that he did, because of all the stories that were involved, because of Jose Ferrer, who was there with his two sons and wife, watching him win. And it was Mark Cassie's, it was the 5-year anniversary of Mark Cassie's father passing away. And the breeder, Gabrielle Calderon, you know, her dad was the one who took this really successful, I mean, they campaigned 3 generations of mares on that family. And he specifically took that mare to Ironicus of all horses, because he felt like the horse would have, enough distance and speed to be able to run these kind of classic, you know, races when nobody else would think of Ironicus as a quote unquote Derby contending, you know, stallion. So it's all of these stories that kind of get mixed into one. And then when the horse hits the wire first, and it's just such an emotional lift, you know how it is. I mean, you've been in the business for you know, longer than I have even. There's no describing it. There's just, it's the highest of, it's the highest of legal highs you can get.
There you go, with a modifier.
Right.
John Green.
We're both Patriot League graduates. We know about partying, so you know.
Well, it's been we're looking forward to Wednesday. In fact, the Raiders moving on and facing Bucknell in the semis, and Navy got knocked off. So the Maroon have seemingly have a pretty clear path, maybe. So
it looks like it. I mean, I'm excited for it. And the NCAA tournament, you know, is such an exciting time, and it coincides with the most exciting time of the year in our business. And just as a fan of both industries, I mean, it is like waking up to Mardi Gras every day when March Madness hits, not only in basketball but also in the racing industry. This is the pinnacle of sports for guys like me. This is the most exciting period of time in the industry.
Well, you got a franchise, and you've got a whole lineup, and this opportunity with Helium, he's going to try to improve from Destin's experience. Destin was the horse that I was reaching for earlier, that Todd won with. He was the first to win the Tampa Bay Derby and then wait for the Derby, and he actually ran well in Derby and then turned around and got beat in the most harrowing beaten in Belmont history, maybe when Destin Long got beaten the Belmont, and I can still see Aaron Wellman's just complete blank look after that beat. Creator? I think Creator is who nailed him at the wire. And that was Aaron with the Twin Creeks team,
right?
Was Randy Coulot when they were Destin together. Well, I'm excited for you and for your father. Tell your father I've got stuff to send to the Dropbox, and he must think I'm a complete tum tum, but we'll get that done. John Green, and of course watch for John with my man Joe Bianca and the TDN podcast, the Writers Room weekly as well. And John, you may be the guest this week for your own.
I may finally have been earned the Green Group guest of the week, but I don't know what I'm going to do with the 3-hour consultation. But you know, it's worth it just to be there. But thank you for having me on, Steve. I really enjoyed it, and also for plugging our podcast on Wednesdays. with the TDN. We certainly have have enjoyed doing that podcast as well. But we always hold yours as the ultimate benchmark on how we're doing.
Well, too kind. You can follow John on Twitter, John Green 2022, and watch for the each week Joe and Bill Finley and John and Alan Carrasco and the team and whoever they bring on each week for the writers' room as well, and for the Green Group for all your financial advice needs, whether you're in the industry or not. They're not exclusive to horse owners and to equine interested parties. John Green, everybody. Let's take a break. Top of the hour. Rich Migliori next with Jimmy Jerkins having to scratch. Dallas Stewart joins us.